Alrighty, welcome back to the Gary Smith Podcast. Today we are here with Craig's Yoga. Tell the audience what you're all about, Craig.
Thanks, Gary. Thanks for having me on your podcast today. Pretty excited to get the opportunity to have a chat about Chris and Cantelmo Wisdom. And it's been a few weeks since Chris passed away, so had a little bit of time to reflect on the movement he started, and just get in touch with some of the people who I haven't really spoken to anyone recently about this. I made a video a little while ago when I found out about Chris's passing, but since then I've taken a little bit of time just to reflect on.
Also, just to let you know, if you want to shout out any of your channels, any of your social media, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, no worries. So how did you first hear about
Cantelmoism? Well, so I've already explained on the podcast a little bit before, but for your sake. So I was doing a YouTube deep dive, you know, where I kind of just like open an incognito tab and see what kind of weird stuff I can find. But like, then Chris's videos started getting recommended to me. And I exited out of that and I immediately subscribed. Now, like, I thought they were really, really interesting, and I couldn't 100% tell if Chris was, like... I couldn't tell if Chris was a fake or not, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are a lot of people who do a similar type of thing as, like, a bit to get, famous. Like, in no disrespect, to somebody who didn't know anything, like... who didn't know any of the context, that seemed pretty crazy. Like,
yeah, I can imagine. A lot of definitely a lot of what he said pretty polarizing to a lot of people. And I think he actually had quite a myriad of different ideas.
Okay, so what was your first experience with Cantelmoism? Your first hearing? Maybe you talked to Chris over Discord. What was that like?
Got to talk to Chris through Reddit probably about a year ago now, when he was like most people, he was giving out a lot of rewards and a lot of guildings for posts and things like that. And I started talking to him. We did a few voice chats, and I was just pretty interested him as a person. I was quite interested in just from his conviction of his ideas, and a lot of those ideas, I think looking back at now, probably, I can see how there was a bit of craziness to them, especially with like the whole faking cancer thing and the DMT is a cure for cancer, which, it's hard to see where he was sort of coming from with that. But I think he is a style like that Trump utilizes a lot, where he says such extreme things that it gains. He actually drove his ideas and movements forward mainly through naysayers and getting such a pretty big negative reaction from people, and now the ones who actually sort of grew it for him.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I think, and that's why he did take extreme stances on things, and obviously without having the proof to back it up, but I think he was trying to put in such new ideas into that psychedelic sort of area, where some of the ideas, they're kind of pretty old, pretty stagnant. So you got like the old school people like Terence McKenna, those sort of guys who were sort of saying, trip in dark rooms and try and create the experience inwards. And Chris was basically saying to people to to keep your eyes open, to go out into nature and do it. So that got a lot of backlash and a lot of negativity from people who haven't done DMT, and also from people who have done DMT, mainly from people who basically have sort of self-appointed themselves as the gatekeepers of it.
Of course.
So you had this interesting situation where he basically didn't really get accepted on both sides of the fence, from people who were sort of pro DMT and people who were sort of also anti-drug. So I think that's why, in the end, when he was struggling to get support because, yeah, the ideas and what he was sort of pushing just didn't really get on both sides, so.
All right, so that's really that really intrigues me. You know, that was, it really hooked some people in, and the people who it, like, really attracted were really, really all about the message that he was giving. And I just find that so intriguing. Like, would you consider yourself a believer in what he preached as a whole?
I mean, it's tough to say. There's definitely some things I do believe in, because I have experienced them myself and understand exactly what he was saying, because when you have that experience and you understand what he is saying for certain things, it does make sense, and it is true and accurate as far as, like, my own beliefs on what he was saying goes. But there was also sides of things where, it just doesn't make sense, or it's just illogical, and you have to kind of separate those ideas from what the true messages are. And one of the toughest things as well for Chris is that he actually ostracized his closest followers, and he had a pattern of that. I remember him and Dan, who Dan was probably one of the closest people to him at that stage. You know, he would regularly visit them, and they would regularly go out for trips and things like that. And I'm pretty sure they did DMT together. And I mean, that ended up in a restraining order. So he had this pattern of behavior where even the people who were most supportive of him and trying to really and genuinely help him in spreading his message and trying to accomplish what he wanted to do and, you know, try and bring light onto some of these subjects, he would actually treat these people the worst out of, you know, anyone. He'd treat them even worse than sometimes some of the people who were really against him. So I think that was tough for a lot of people to go through. And I had a lot of times where people come to me and be like, oh, Chris blocked me on this platform. Chris said, you know, really mean things to me and things like that. And I'm just like, look, anything on the internet, you probably don't want to take that too personally. You know, Chris was probably under a huge amount of pressure at the time. And yeah, it just seemed that he just seemed to lash out at people, especially people close to him as well. And I think, I feel that could be part of the reason why his family obviously disconnected from him, and that definitely caused him a large amount of pain and grief. But at the end of the day, you can only blame, you know, the person's behavior for that. I mean, if you're going to keep, being mean to people who are, you know, really on your side, it's no surprise when they, you know, basically turn against you. And that's what happened to a lot of people who were, especially early on in the movement, who, you know, really put in a lot of effort to try and build things up. It was almost like a self-sabotage in a way. When things were going good, that's when he liked to, you know, really make some drama and, you know.
So you said in some previous DMs that the audience, of course, can't see, that you were close to Chris even though you hadn't met him in person. Did you ever find yourself being ostracized by him or in that similar position that others found themselves in?
Yeah, there was a couple of times there. I would have definitely met up with him for sure, but I actually invited him to come visit me in Australia, and that was actually one of the last email exchanges I had with him, because I had a sense that things weren't really going that well for him in Los Angeles, and we started up a meetup group where the idea was just to get the thing that I saw and what I noticed and what I really felt about it is that he was just really lacking a human connection, and he was trying to find that connection online through various communities and, you know, and going, but he was getting a lot of negativity thrown again at him at the same time. And everyone who has met Chris and actually went and spent time with him and, you know, went and vaped DMT with him, all said the same thing. They said, he's not crazy. He's actually really smart. He's pretty switched on. Maybe a little bit antisocial or something perhaps, but he needed that human connection. Like, he was all by himself in his house. I mean, he had two dogs, but yes, to my going back, I said, I would definitely meet up with him, and I even got some flights organised. But I was just waiting for his confirmations, waiting on some passport issues and things to come back to, get him to have a trip over to Australia. But yeah, I guess the timing of it never worked out, and
So I kind of thought a similar thing. So back when all the videos were up on his YouTube channel, because like I said, I was subscribed, I kind of watched all of his videos. Like, there were a few where he was like in person with some people, and it was kind of like he was being interviewed by them. And the strongest thing that I could think of was he seemed to be a whole lot more comfortable talking to a camera while out in the LA desert than he was, like, just talking to someone right there. That was just a thought of mine. Do you have any thoughts on that? Maybe that was kind of similar to what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think he had that format where he'd walk out into the desert, like his bushwalking area, and film like that. But if you go back and watch the very first sort of podcast that he did with Tiger, you can see the change that happens over time with him. And this is quite interesting, because at the start, when he was dressed in a suit, you know, they were in some very formal environment. And I think the first interviews went for a couple of hours, and it was very clear that Chris, you know, is very smart, very switched on sort of person, and very capable. And as time went on, you see it gets to the end, and it's basically him just in a, you know, out in the desert, sort of almost rambling to an extent. And yeah, it's just that change in him over the time. And I think a lot of that change had to do with the more he got involved in these online communities, and the more he really took, like, a lot of these insults personally that he was getting. And I had the the opportunity to be an admin on some of his accounts, and I could see just how much negativity and hatred he was receiving on a daily. If it wasn't, there's probably three types of messages he'd receive, like, constantly, and it was seriously like a barrage of messages. You'd get like hundreds and up to thousands a day. It's either people begging for money, it's either people basically saying he's like the worst person ever, and then you'd have a few people who were like supportive. But yeah, the negativity definitely outweighed the support, that's for sure.
And especially considering at least what type of person he seemed to be, at least to me from an outsider's perspective, it was a very brave thing of him to try and, like, you know, put himself out there on all these communities. Like, I always got, like, a really dad-ish vibe from Chris. Like, somebody's older dad who knows how to use technology. Yeah. Like, just that's the vibe that I got from just, like, how he conversated with people and stuff. Like, kind of awkward, but likable enough. So,
yeah, that's the thing. So, like, realizing his age, and he probably not the most computer literate person ever. Like, or maybe he definitely has some technology skills, but he was just showing his age. I mean, it's like anyone who's, I think, is 57 maybe.
That's what I heard.
Like, media talking on Reddit, it's like they just. There's a bit of an age gap there. Also, his professional background, I think, is interesting to note here, is that he was like the president of a pharmaceutical company that's also based in Japan, they've got a different culture when it comes to how they treat the leaders and treat the bosses, basically. So I don't think he was used to being challenged a lot about his ideas. I think in a professional setting, he was basically, you know, shown with a lot more respect. I mean, that's just the Japanese culture. So, and then going onto Reddit, where it's literally like 90% trolls and people who are like actively, you know, trying to shoot you down all the time. I think that was tough on him and a big hurdle for him to overcome.
So, how to phrase this question. Were there any choices that Chris made with his movement that you personally deem as the wrong choice or maybe unethical, just to any extent. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sure there probably was. I mean, at the time when there's a lot of action happening every day and a lot of, trying to progress things forward and really try and propel things, I'm sure, like, the lines probably do get blurred on what... I can't think of any specific examples, but, I think things get taken out of context quite a lot. I know there's been a couple of situations he was in where things can definitely look bad when the reality of what's actually happened on his side of things is a little bit different to what's been presented or portrayed. There's also seeking some issues. There's some issues as well where I think Chris was just proven wrong and just couldn't accept that he was wrong on that and had to double down on things a lot. And that's, and I think for a lot of the followers as well, was trying to, there was a lot of negative things that were happening and trying to shift that into a positive thing. And I think, that's one of the skills that one of the mindsets that I try and really live by is that when these negative things do happen, is to try and shift it and make it into a positive thing. And I mean, sometimes it's harder to do, and sometimes and that's the beauty about reflection, looking back on it, and you look and think, well, maybe we could have done things differently. And yeah, I'm sure there was lots of times Chris probably, thought that as well. But yeah, I guess you got to play the cards you dealt, and he had to, That's one of the biggest things I still admire about him is he had his convictions in it. He didn't.
Oh, absolutely.
And for other people, and I feel that could probably be one of the number one things, that even if people don't agree on his message, at least he stood up for something. And, he said, he talked what he believes. And it was, he didn't. It's a pretty remarkable thing these days. I mean, you see people,
absolutely,
who chop and change their opinions and try and go with the flow about whatever's trendy or popular at the moment. He really balls to the wall there, and he really gave up everything for that message.
Of course.
Basically everything. I think part of him losing his life was also part of that. He really gave everything for it. Which is pretty remarkable to see. It was pretty remarkable to see panning out in real time as well. Never seen anything like it before, and probably won't see anything like that again. I don't think, just to that extreme.
So you mentioned that you mentioned in the DMs that you own cantomoism.com. Is this true?
Yeah.
Did you have any, say in, the design of that website, the layout maybe? What was your hand in cantomoism.com?
Basically that is my design. That's my main goal with the website was to aggregate the information that Chris had already posted through Reddit, and that's where all the content comes from. So I didn't want to interfere too much with the content. If anything, I'd try and elaborate on it a little bit, and some of the articles or blog posts on there are just trying to understand what he's saying. So I researched a certain subject and just do a little one-page write-up about it, just trying to figure it out. But I knew that the information that he was sharing was pretty valuable, and a lot of the insights it was definitely worth saving.
And of course,
just compiling it into one site that it just made sense at the time. So Chris and I had a lot of sort of back and forth with a lot of things. We had a relationship where he never told me what to do. It wasn't like I ever worked for him or he'd set a directive or he'd give an order or anything like that. There was nothing like that. It's another part that I really admire about Chris is that he had this leadership style where any action is better than inaction in a sense. And as long as you're doing something with the purpose of trying to create more love and harmony and basically positivity in the world, if you're presenting that forward and that's your main goal, you really can't do anything wrong. So as long as it's coming from a place of from there, any action is valuable. So I didn't, when I started the website, I didn't even ask him, I just did it. And that was basically how things worked. It's like with the, when we did the first edition of the comic, the Cantel comic, he doesn't know about this stuff. This stuff just happens.
I was unaware that there was even a Cantel comic.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's just like a, it was actually a really good collaboration between a lot of people. And that's what Cantelmoism is actually, that's the core of what it's about. It's using interesting ideas, but also making something new out of it and using originality, and collaboration was amazing for that. And it's, yeah, like we had had people doing voiceovers for it. Mr. Jewel, he was the voiceover dude for that. And yeah, it's just awesome. Like it was a lot of fun to do, and that's what it was all about, and that's what it still is about. It's like, I don't do anything like that if it's not fun, and that was basically the message for it. And it was awesome.
Just off the top here, like, if you link that to me, I'll put it in the description, or like, I'll link it in my podcast.
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually just starting on. I've been doing a little bit on the second episode soon, but
how's that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a fun thing to do.
As somebody who's a whole lot more involved in the community, how has the community of Cantelmoism taken the tragic news of Chris's passing?
It's been quite a wide response, I guess. I think, interestingly enough, there was a lot of the people, I would say, who were supporters and the followers, they immediately said that they don't think Chris was that Chris suicided. So that was an interesting reaction, which is a strange timing with that whole Jeffrey Epstein thing, where majority of the people don't think he suicided. And so that was an interesting thing. I mean, my personal opinion on that, and as you know, I've had a little bit of time now to sink in the news. You know, Chris obviously did show suicidal tendencies up until that point, but just the methods of how he did it and things. So I think there'll always be a little bit of a question mark over what actually happened there. But I think, generally the response has been, I think for people, it's not the biggest surprise in the world. I mean, there was a lot of people that said Chris needed help the whole way through. And I mean, that's pretty obvious now since his passing, that if it was a suicide, he was in a mental hospital before on a hold for showing suicidal ideation. So it's not the biggest shock in the world in that. Yeah, but it's just sad though. It's sad that it had to come down to that. I think
of course.
Yeah, looking back to a lot of his actions, it kind of looks like he was preparing himself, for that, I guess. But yeah, I mean, I don't. Yeah, it was hard because he, really went all in on something. And it's like one of the issues that we had with it is like, how do we make this sustainable? Is because Chris obviously only has a finite amount of money, and basically his professional reputation's forever gone. Like, with, I know in America, like some of the things he's talking about, or pretty much any country, it's like, good luck getting a job on that. If people Google your first name, it's like all this advocating DMT is like on the first page. So yeah, I don't know. That's a tough one.
So in your personal opinion, as someone who knew him, do you think that maybe doing DMT maybe a little bit too often might have like affected his mental health? Excuse me. Oh, hello. Hello?
Hello? Oh, yeah, sorry, just cut out for a second.
Oh, all right. So, like I was saying, do you think that maybe, like, the DMT might have negatively affected his mental health? Or do you think that might have been something that he enjoyed enough to where it would have been, like, a stress reliever for him? Because it seemed like, to me, he was very happy in the videos he made.
Sometimes.
The thing was, he was suicidal before he did DMT. So...
So, do you think that, like... That, like, maybe that prolonged what was going to happen? What eventually happened? Or do you think that it was unaffected? Or do you think that if he never touched DMT, we would still be in the place we are right now?
If we stick to the facts on what happened, is that he was in a mental hospital showing suicidal ideations before starting DMT. So then we look at the period after that, and he claimed to have like a crazy number of breakthroughs, like it was over 2,000. So he was doing a lot of DMT. What would have happened if he didn't do DMT? I don't know. It's, you know, he probably would have just been like everyone else who, you know, just lived their life out. Maybe he got depressed again and ended his life. We just don't know. But I think it's almost like he went out in a bit of sort of like a rock star manner. It's like,
oh yeah,
he realized that he was probably, you know, and I mean, this is a hard thing to say, especially talking about, you know, on a podcast, but if you're going to die, everyone's going to die eventually. Like, that's the reality of it. I mean, some of, like, the community knows, like, I used to pick up dead bodies for a living. So I'm very aware of, like, the death and the life and death aspect of things. And if you're of a certain age and you know you're going to die, it's not a bad thing to like really enjoy your time left on Earth. I mean, it's pretty evident to see that. I mean, he was banging porn stars and, you know, probably living out his, you know, last wishes. And I mean,
of course.
To someone who's like,
hello.
There you go. Yeah, it's like an interesting. Yeah, it's. I mean, everyone's got their. In my opinion and my belief is that everyone has the right to end their own life if they choose to. So luckily for him, it wasn't like a tragic accident or something. I mean, he had a bit of time to prepare it, and hopefully, you know, he got his last wishes and things he wanted to do. So
see, like, my personal belief is very similar to yours, but like, you know, I really like the idea of like doctor-assisted suicides, because the way that he went out, like, that would have been just awful. It was hot.
Yes.
It was bad. I don't know if it was confirmed if he was, like, tripping on DMT at the time. That would have been even worse, in my opinion.
I still haven't seen the coroner's report on that, but I 100% agree with you. And that's another thing that sort of leads me to believe that it might not be suicide, is that, I mean, Chris was a biochemist. If he wanted to die in a relatively painless, easy way, it wouldn't have been that hard for him. I mean, he's very, you know, he easily could have, you know, made something that would just put you to sleep and you die. Like, it's not that... To go out by cutting your own throat, it's a little bit pretty brutal way to do it.
But
I mean, there's going to be a lot of people who disagree with that, especially a lot of religious people. I know that that's heavily against what they believe in. So, but
You know, I respect the opinions of other people. In this situation, I respect Chris's wish that if he did die, then that's what he wanted.
And so,
obviously, he was in a lot of pain as well. There was a lot of issues going on that I don't know. And I think the core of your question, though, is what you're saying. Is like, do you think DMT exacerbated that problem or not? And, yeah, I honestly don't know. I'm not sure.
So,
in a way, I think it could. I think it could make you accept death a little bit more, because when you experience that, that state, it's incredible, and it's far more spiritual than in the material world that we live in. So I think it could in a preparation for that, and I think looking at in the future as well, I think DMT could be used for people who are who do have terminal illness. And this is one of the big things that I still believe in, a part of like what you know Cantelmoism is about. It's about the choice of being able to choose if you do want to have these experiences or not, because and not make it illegal and not make it so you end up in jail if you do want to try.
Personally, I'm a big advocate
on your deathbed.
Personally, I'm a big advocate for like I like the idea of like how in the at least in America we've integrated into the weed legal states weed bars. If we could do that, I think it would shift the public eye a whole lot. Like DMT bars, if you know, if saying it's legal, of course, that would shift the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like before hash bars were really like a thing, and it was legal in a few states, like the public opinion of it was very different than what it is or what it would become. So I think that's personally the way to go. You know, like we get some bodyguards and stuff in there, a couple of bouncers and some doctors and you know a DMT
That's how it I mean that's exactly how it should be administered. I mean traditionally that's how it's done. I mean you have these ayahuasca ceremonies in Peru. And you go somewhere, and you're under.
So,
yeah.
Let me think about how I want to phrase this question.
Yeah.
So, have you heard any of the, like, not really allegations, but, like, thoughts that maybe Chris was trying to promote DMT because he was also making and selling the DMT?
No, definitely not. He's financially, if Chris was in trouble, he could always sell DMT if he wanted to, but he was very cautious with that. I mean, he was under the FBI definitely knew about him, but they visited his house a couple of times, and there's you know video evidence of that happening. He definitely wouldn't. The only side note to that is that the company that he used to work for did manufacture equipment that the commercial use possibly could, I think, be used for it. And I was just reading through some of his posts the other day, and he did mention that very early on, is that the company he worked for was manufacturing. They were assigned equipment manufacturing company, basically, to sell equipment, and some of the equipment they were using could be used for that. So, because that kind of makes sense if you think about like what he was promoting is like if you want to get DMT legal, and maybe the company he was working for. But then again, he also had a falling out with that company as well. So, I don't know for sure, but. Yeah, I would say with fairly confidence that he never sold DMT. He definitely gave a lot of it away. Like anyone who went and met up with him, definitely, you know, he would, you know, he'd give it to them. But, and that goes back to like what we were saying is that this is how it should be. It's like if you want to experience DMT, you should be able to go somewhere and have someone who is, you know, experienced with it and who can guide you through it and do it properly because. Yeah, I mean, the other option is just doing it at home by yourself, and Yeah, I mean, both are good options, I guess. But yeah, for it to be legalized, I mean, that's what it hopefully it comes to, because yeah, going to jail over something like that, terrible outcome for everyone.
So, like, I don't know if there's an Australian equivalent, but have you heard the term civil disobedience?
Like against the government, or
like against the government, yeah. So
rioting and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, a few of the more lighthearted things, because I've mentioned Chris on Reddit before. Like, some of my biggest interactions came from this Ask Reddit thread, where I pretty recently found out about r/cantomoism and cantomoism exposed. The question was, what's the weirdest thing you found on YouTube? And I, of course, said, yeah, there's this guy in the desert who talks about the ceremony of ayahuasca. And then people just started linking me towards these things. And, like, some of the more lighthearted, like, theories, so to say, were that, like, he was trying to go for a more civil disobedience thing. So, like, the general idea would be, like, since he was promoting it and he was getting his message out there, it would slowly start to change the public opinion and more people would start doing DMT. And yeah, since more people are safely doing DMT...
Really quickly there, that is 100% correct. Is that I know for a fact that people who, myself included, I would have never done DMT, I don't think, without like having him spreading the message like that. And there's been, I don't know what like numbers are, but there's been multiple incidents, like multiple people have come forward and said, yeah, I did, I learned about it from Chris, you know. I mean, Chris even posted videos how to make it and stuff, so like he was making it pretty. And that's what it came down to, is that just do DMT, and a lot of people did DMT just from him like saying that.
So like, a personal theory that I have is that Chris came at just the right time, because like, yeah, you know, with weed being how it is right now in America, you know, basically everyone and their mother smokes weed, and I think that loosens the like, that loosens the public opinion of drugs as a whole, and like,
yeah, that's like the foot in the door to a little bit of further openness.
And Colorado just legalized mushrooms, so like that kind of threw off, like, so to say, the drug economy, you know. Now okay, since yeah, quality mushrooms can be purchased, all your average basic street dealers need a new drug to hop on. And that was about around the time I seen Chris's videos, and at least in the middle, like mid-America, DMT's kind of like popped off. I don't know how much it is influenced by Chris and how much it is influenced by a whole lot of other things I'm not smart enough to recognize, but he yeah, absolutely had his hand. And if it becomes legal, at least in America, then I feel like anyone who does it can attribute it to Chris.
Yeah, in a sense, I could almost see this as like a double-edged sword, because going back onto your point before is whether you think, whether people think that he's, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, sorry, the phone just cut off a sec. Whether people think that his mental illness was exacerbated by his DMT use, and that could be a issue where people think, well, we don't want to end up like Chris, so we probably shouldn't do DMT, because that, even though he's, I mean, his intentions may be worth it, more people to try it, knowing his full story where, you know, things obviously didn't end up that well for him, is that a lot of people might be put off by that as well, so.
Oh, absolutely.
But, so, I think that's what it comes down to, responsibility and the decisions of the individual person. And Chris, even though Chris was definitely, Chris noticed that the majority, a lot of people whose opinions will form in the future are going to be obviously coming from the younger generation. I think that's why he went on these gilding sprees in teenagers, mm-hmm, because he wanted to propagate that idea. And use the momentum of that weed legalization movement going forward. And like you mentioned, that it, I'm not sure if it's legalized or decriminalized or in certain areas like Oakland and other places, and Colorado, like you said, that movement's going to continue to progress. And once, you know, weed becomes legalized, they're going to look at other substances and other things like psilocybin mushrooms, like you mentioned as well. And you realize, like, these things aren't dangerous. Like, they're not, you know, they're not toxic substances. They really shouldn't be illegal in the first place, in a sense. It's almost like our whole system's completely backflipped. It's like the things that should be illegal are illegal, like tobacco and alcohol. Those things cause way more devastation and destruction than, you know, psilocybin mushrooms, marijuana, you know, LSD or DMT combined. Like, they're just not dangerous substances, but for some reason that's just how the system is. So the question is, and what, you know, Chris is saying, what Cantel Monism is saying, it's like, well, can we change that? Can we, you know, put forth something new that's actually going to benefit a great amount of people who might need it? Or at least have the option of having it if they want it. Like, it's not to say that everyone has to do DMT. I mean, that would be a great outcome, but let people decide if they want to do it or not without, you know, having such great fears, like, looming above their head when they do it. And a lot of this pre-anxiety that people get when they first do DMT for the first time is that they know that, hey, this is a drug, this is an illegal activity that I'm doing, you know. You got to strip all that shit and just get it down to, like, what it should be about. And it's like, it's about the experience and trying to create something that into a positive. And really, it's like what all these pioneers about the psychedelics were saying. It's like, really expand your consciousness and really understand that, hey, there's something, you know, much bigger happening out here. You know, it's not like, yeah, like, and when you can really experience that for yourself, it's a positive thing, man. It gives you a little bit of hope, you know, that, hey, this material thing is not all there is, you know.
Of course, of course. So, let me look down my list of questions I was going to ask you.
They're great questions so far. I'm really impressed you've done your research on it as well. Especially, yeah, just learning, you know, learning about it recently, man. Well done.
Oh, thank you. Like I mentioned, I learned about this fairly recently, and I was kind of on the cusp of things. A little bit more, like, about my story with Chris was that, like, so when the allegations came out about him, like, I believe it was, like, a child endangerment thing, and, like, maybe a few others, I don't know, like...
I don't think in child endangerment, because I don't think he had any child in his possession at the time, but I think a child grooming, maybe, because he was talking to, talking to someone underage, I think, one, perhaps.
So, yeah, like, it was something about that, and then somebody told me that he was doxing people, and at that point, I wanted to...
He definitely did dox people, yep.
That was when I metaphorically got out of Dodge, because... So, I had a few Reddit conversations with him, like... So, what it amounted to was, hi there, I'm not going to say, well, it's in the podcast, actually. I'm Gary Smith. I live here. I'm really interested in this. Blah, 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 blah. And, like, a few days later, he got back to me. You know, it's probably what he tells everyone, like, oh, that's great. You can join my Discord right here. And it was in the Discord, like, a little while later that I found out he was doxing people. So...
Yeah. Was that the Discord before this Discord, or
I don't know, because I left that Discord. I'm kind of new to, like, Discord and stuff, so I think it was this one. I don't know.
The new one started because the old one got deleted, basically.
So, yeah, I left because I had shared some personal information with him, and, you know, I was very scared of that situation. You know, You know, I'm a 17-year-old man. And especially in this time, my parents have, you know, like, demonized strangers online, and this is the sort of thing that would happen. So it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction.
100%, man. Like, you got to use common sense and put your safety first. You definitely don't want to be divulging, you know, personal information to other people, like whether it's Chris or anyone in, you know, anyone basically that you don't want. That's one of the rules that I live by. Anything that I put, like whether it's a private conversation, a photo, a chat or whatever, I assume that anyone in the world's going to read that, not just the person I'm sending it to.
So, of course,
you know, people tried to call me out before with information that I've given out to people, but anything that I've willingly divulged to people, I'm well aware of what I've said and that I'm willing for them to, you know, basically share it and to expose it. And that's what happened. It's just, that's just the nature of the internet, is that, you know, I wouldn't. But with things like Chris, I mean, Chris is not going to go, or he didn't go purposely out of his way to dox people.
Can you explain to me how this situation happened? Because I only know, I kind of heard the words he doxed people, then jerked right out of this thing.
I'll just take back that statement I just made. I would say, actually, I made an incorrect statement there. He definitely did go out of his way to dox people. So, yeah, that, whether he was, you know, I mean, there's never a reason to dox people. I mean, there's no way, you know, you can defend that kind of behavior, but yeah. That is just how it was. I mean,
so,
that's what he did, so,
like, what exactly happened? What in his mind warranted these people being doxxed, if you know?
Well, he was up. I mean, the situation with Dan. I mean, I've talked about this on some videos before as well. But I mean, just for your benefit and maybe some of the people who haven't heard the story, he basically gave Dan $5,000,
mm-hmm.
and for a specific reason. He said, all right, we'll use this $5,000 for... And he was very clear in what that reason was. And then at the same time, Dan went overseas. At that very day that he was going overseas, he was concerned about Chris's welfare, and he called the police to Chris's house to check up on him, to make sure that he was not going to be a danger to himself or to others, which, you know, is a fair move. And what Chris could never come and realize about this, I mean, Dan had the best intentions for him. If your friend is going to hurt themselves or hurt other people, of course the only action you can take is to call, you know, someone to go check up on him. Chris obviously took this the wrong way, because the police obviously came out there with guns, you know. So when Dan got back from his holiday, he said, hey, I want my $5,000 back, because you know, you haven't used it for whatever purpose I said that you should be using it for. And Dan said, no, you gave that to me as a gift. Technically, I don't really have to give it back to you. So Chris obviously said, hey, you know, I want my money back.
Yeah.
This is the thing. And one of the things I really do believe Chris got right is that money is, I'm not sure the exact quote, but money is the root of all evil. And all these problems always stem from money or power or something in the hierarchy like that. So he basically doxed Dan. I think he was trying to get him fired from his work. Maybe he was pissed off that he got the police called on him. I don't know, but ever since then they never I know Dan, you know, Dan I mean, Dan and I are fine, even though, you know, you could say that I doxed him as well. I put out his full name on a YouTube video, and, you know, looking back on it now, probably not the right thing to do it, but yeah, I have to take ownership of that and responsibility for that. And yeah, I know Dan was pretty sad when Chris passed away as well. And,
oh, of course.
Yeah,
I feel like if anybody in the audience has had anyone go in the same sort of way, like by their own hand, they know that, like, you know, Even that person's enemies will be regretful towards what happened. I think that's human nature. Like,
yeah.
For most mentally healthy people, the idea of ending your own life is just such a horrible thing that, like, they can't even, like, visualize it. So, like, even some people's enemies, you know, will come out of the works to mourn when that sort of thing happens. And I'm not trying to imply that maybe Dan had any kind of ill nature towards Chris. But yeah. Heavy stuff, dude.
If people, you know, do the wrong thing by them, of course he's going to retaliate. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying about that. Yeah, suicide. I mean, suicide's a tough thing to deal with. And if anyone who's listening has lost someone to suicide, they'll understand, you know, the pain that people got.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing.
I think your mic cut out just a little bit. You want to re-say that?
Is that better now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes his phone's cutting out, but, yeah, an interesting thing with that is, like, you can tell when people are genuine about it. Like, if someone's genuinely upset when that person's passed away, it's a little bit different. They're not, like, virtue signaling that can happen sometimes, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Like, tragic thing. Rest in peace, Chris. I hope you're living it up in whatever afterlife there is. Maybe you were right. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting if he did. I mean, Chris obviously believed in a spiritual realm, so. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what would have been going through his head at that moment, but.
Do you personally believe in the afterlife or Chris's afterlife? Like Chris's version of the afterlife?
I honestly don't know. I mean, he didn't really talk about much of an afterlife. Like, he never really said what happened after people died. So, he talked about a lot about it, like the spiritual realm and being able to see entities and interact with them. But, yeah, as far as what happens once you're dead, that's the great unknown. Nobody can say that definitely, you know, what happened.
Do you have any thoughts or theories, any religions that you subscribe to for that?
Nah, not particularly. Man, that is literally the unknown. I don't think that will ever, yeah. I mean, DMT can make you experience things that are so far outside of the realm of what this material world is, but you're still conscious and you're still living. What happens once you're dead? No, I don't think anyone knows that. People who say they know that probably, yeah, they're just bullshitting, man.
Yeah.
No, I really don't. I honestly believe nobody knows what happens once someone's died. It's just, yeah.
So, a fun thought.
Hopefully we'll go to the class, but.
Oh, of course. So, a fun thought that I have, you know, also coming from pretty devout atheist, like, I'd like to believe that one, like, small, tiny religion that had, like, 13 people in it, like, maybe an Indian tribe or something, is the right one.
Yeah,
and only, like, those 13 Indians, like, go to their version of heaven, and we're all, like, being chased by bulls or something for eternity. That'd be crazy.
Yeah, it's like, five people on a basketball team in heaven, and like they're the ones who got it right. Everyone else is like, nah, you got that wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris was a devout atheist, and I mean, this is another like factual thing that is incredibly mind blowing. If a devout atheist, and especially on Reddit, where anyone who's, you know, a Yale educated atheist is going to be generally accepted because, you know, they just put those people up on a pedestal. For him to come down and say, hey, you know, change, and this is also scientifically proven as well with a that Hopkins study that came out, is that people who are atheists will go and have a DMT experience and realize and be like, hey, you know, there is a God, and that's what it, that's it's mind-shattering to understand that. It's like people get caught up in the definitions of what God is, and this is one of the tricky things that like the movement will come you know, any religious movement comes across and against is that people have got these preconceived notions about what God is. God is actually pretty simple. It's like, it is just everything. It's like the sum total of everything. And that's what it is. That's why it can't be denied. And when people actually, and when you have an experience where you actually experience it and really come to understand it, it's not like in a word language, or it's not like, you know, a visual thing. When you really become and feel it and understand it, it blows all the atheist beliefs out of the water. And that, I mean, it's terribly shocking for a lot of people, especially people who base their identity on atheism. And
oh yeah, of course. Like, one thing that I really like is, like, the Hindu belief. I don't know if you're familiar with Hinduism very much, but they believe that...
Yeah, a little bit. I used to be a Hare Krishna, so...
I really like the thought that, you know, all roads lead to the top of the mountain, you know what I'm saying? Like, it seems like, from my very limited experience, that, like, a lot of religion just seems to be trying to make people better people. And, you know, that, in theory, is pretty good. You know, like, I don't like it when religious massacres happen, of course. It, like, as with justification of, like, pure, like, you know, any religion or anything. But, like, just making people better people or trying that is always good, in my opinion. Which is why I can't really say, like, you know, Chris had pure intentions, it seemed, at least, to an outside perspective. So I can't really, like, say anything that he did was 100% bad. You know, he had good intentions, you could tell.
That's an interesting thing, is to talk about outside and inside perspectives, because I don't think there's a line on that. I mean, if you've heard what he has to say, you're in the same position as somebody who you would think is the inside. The inside and the outside are the same people. They're not different.
It's just how
you want to label things, essentially. I mean, the message doesn't really change. Whether you're looking at it from one angle or looking at it from an insider's perspective or whatever, that's still the same thing.
I mean, yes, they are the same thing, but, like, the perception of that same thing can vary, like, depending on where you're coming from. Like, me, a 17-year-old American boy, probably doesn't think the same thing about Cantalmoism as you, Australian man, probably does. I didn't have the same experiences with Chris to form my knowledge of what he was like. The biggest thing that I had was, like, a few back and forths as a Reddit thing. So, like, yeah, well, what he was saying doesn't change. How people tend to take it is very different. Like, as we were talking about at the beginning of this, you said he used a tactic like President Trump uses, where he says some very outlandish things to kind of get the hype up. You know, as somebody who experienced those hype up things, that kind of sounds crazy to me. But as somebody who knows what that's supposed to mean, you probably took that in a completely different way. Just the same thing of anything he said.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that. I think that is definitely correct in what you're saying. I mean, everyone's gonna have a different perspective about what's been said, but what my point is with it is that the ideas that Chris speaks about and what he was talking about, you have to be able to separate them from the person. The person is actually not that important when it comes down to what the ideas are. So, I mean, what Chris did is that he purposely injected errors into his work as a form of also oversimplification and hyperbole. And it was intentional. I mean, that's what he did it for. But these small errors, he didn't have to correct himself. And that's what people latched onto to drive the message forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, like, he would purposely leave errors in the message in almost like a, I'm not sure if you're familiar with an 80-20 rule.
What's an 80-20 rule?
So 80% of the things that he would be saying would be correct, but the other 20% would be intentionally incorrect. Or if it was unintentionally incorrect, it still is incorrect. But that 20% of the error is what actually spread the message through, not so much what the correct thing is. I mean, some mistakes are just all mistakes, but when you see like the consistent stream of mistakes from Chris, you have to be open for the possibility that these mistakes are about controlling the focus and the energy.
Of course. That's a really interesting thought.
That's what Trump calls it. He uses those sort of tactics, I guess, to I mean, the interesting thing with Chris is obviously he had a bit of money to spend on driving those ideas forward. Is, you know, the question gets asked is, what could that money been spent on, you know, elsewhere, and whether that was the best use for the money is to get the movement. So I don't know. That's a tough one.
Well, I'm gonna have to cut this podcast off. I thank you for your time. Great interview.
Yeah, no, good time. Thank you for having me on. I really, man, one of the only things that I really was hesitant to do this, and not because of you personally, but because, you know, just, yeah. Sometimes, you know, you do things you don't want to have to do. And one of the big things is, man, at least you're doing something, especially as a 17-year-old fella, mate. Just keep doing things. Keep working hard, man. Keep working hard, doing things you like doing. And such a great initiative, man. I would have never thought when I was 17 to have a podcast like this. Fantastic, bro. Really good effort, man. And that's what I commend. Initiatives like this, man, and creativity. It's, I bet, man, you would have never thought you'd be talking to some Australian dude today, man.
Absolutely not. I don't know why I assumed you were from the UK, like, just from your texts, but, like, the accent really, like, made me aware, you know what I'm saying? Like, just from the way that you spoke in DMs, I don't know why I just assumed UK.
Well, I speak the Queen's English, so. I'll put this out there, though, a little Easter egg for anyone who actually listens to the end of this podcast. So, I'm Craig Joga. But the new name on Discord is Damoyle. So if anyone's wondering who the fuck Damoyle is, this is it. This is the drop.
Wow. Bold.
And thank you so much for having me again. I really appreciate your time. And, man, keep up the good work. I'll be subscribed to your future podcasts. And, yeah.
Thanks, fella.
Good stuff, bro. Good stuff. All right, man.